Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have with me Julian Meyer, coming to us from New York, New York. How's your day going, Julian?
Nathan, it's pretty good. I just finished up a little travel circuit down to Florida and then Louisiana, New Orleans, actually, for the Collision Conference. So a little tired, but happy to be home, to say the least.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that makes two of us. I'm a little tired, too. My 40-something Nathan reverted to his 16-year-old Nathan last night at a punk show, The Descendants, in Berkeley. And I have to say, I'm proud of myself. I slam danced and got in the mosh pit for like most of the show and escaped mostly unharmed, except for a little bruise on my nose and some pain in my knees, you know. So anyway.
Yeah, I love it. Big punk rock fan myself, so I know the battering that can take place at one of those shows. So good for you.
battering on the body, but good for the soul. You know,
it's absolutely.
Like, yeah. Cool. Okay. So I want to hear about Collision. Collision just ended. And for anyone not familiar, it's a pretty big event put on by the Web Summit guys, correct?
Yep. By the Web Summit family. Absolutely.
So what was going on in Collision? It was in New Orleans. To give us the kind of lay of the land. And then I want to hear about your specific, you know, time there.
Yeah, lay of the land. So Collision, without being too big of an endorsement, I think has become the largest startup conference here in the U.S., if I'm not mistaken. There were 25,000 attendees, and I'm pretty sure that number, 2,500 of those were startups, and then you had another 1,000 or 1,500 or so investors. So it's a breeding grounds, if you will, for entrepreneurs that are looking to not just connect with other you know, companies or with other people to expand their network, but really to connect directly with investors. And there was a lot of this early stage investment stuff going on and a lot of breakfast meetings and connections. And, you know, I have a weird relationship with Collision and the Web Summit family of events, because I actually started going to them, Web Summit, that is, and all that whole family, Collision, I forget what the other names are, but I started going to these events when I was actually a fundraising CEO with my last startup. Mm-hmm. And now I'm kind of on the other side, going in and doing a little bit more of the media side and B, more on the investor side. So it's kind of been a strange flip for me, but a wonderful experience nonetheless.
I went to Web Summit, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago when it was still in Ireland. And that was the scale of it was crazy. The rub I think these guys get is that they're, you know, selling demo booths to these founders, and they have all this stuff on there, like people who had a demo booth last year raised all this money. But then the complaint sometimes you hear from the founders that actually buy a demo booth is that there aren't actually any investors walking the halls, and they're just kind of startups pitching to other startups. I don't know. Did you get a sense that there's real investor presence there this year? What's your feel?
Well, see, and I'm so happy you brought that up, and it's kind of tough because you never know, you know, how deep you can get into these things on podcasts. But, you know, I like to go pretty deep on mine too and give founders real insight. So here's the real insight behind that. 110% when I was going to the Web Summit family of events as a fundraiser, I did not feel the value at all from having a booth. The whole difference between now being on the investor side and, you know, the media side and the fundraiser or the company side is that you see the whole event from a different light. So let's look at it from the founder side. Mm-hmm. From the founder side, you're actually paying a pretty exorbitant amount of money for not 3 days. You don't get the full time to exhibit. You only actually get 1 day to exhibit, and you get a very small booth in a very crowded aisle, and it's very, very difficult to stand out. And what they'll do is they'll try and upcharge you to get you into these different stages, but they have a way of making you feel exclusive, like you're special, like you applied, like you got something. But really what it is it's a way to make more money off of you, which if you know anything about me and, you know, my podcast and what I believe in, I'm totally fine with that. That's just capitalism, if you will. But if you want to be smart, you know, and this is what I've been telling, you know, clients and friends that are startups that are going to these types of events, specifically the Web Summit family. Nathan, all the real stuff happens at night. They have this thing called a pub summit, and Knight Summit, and you can go as a general attendee, put the name of your startup on the badge. You can get those tickets for incredibly cheap prices compared to what you'd have to pay for as a startup to go there. And then you can go in and you can actually hack the event, if you will, right? You can go in, and if you're outgoing and you're willing to talk to people, you can recognize people with the investor badge. You can recognize people with the media badge. And you can go up to them as an attendee and start a conversation. And in my opinion, you can get just as much, if not more, out of those events and actually make connections with investors without actually having to pay these exorbitant amount for a little booth and have the stress of having to exhibit.
Yeah, interesting. I have seen there's sort of a look you can see from these startups in the demo booth alleys where they're just kind of like hungry for someone to come talk to them that's not another startup, you know?
I'll tell you, it's desperation, Nathan. It's pure desperation. It's kind of sad to see, and that's why I think that the best way to do it is you go not necessarily for the event, right? And this is part of being a startup founder, right, which I've been three times, is everything is hackable. You kind of have to hack the event. Show up on site, go to the city. New Orleans is a fun city and people are going to go out after these, you know, 9 to 5 events. Just figure out what bar they're going to be at. Maybe you don't even need a ticket. Go to that restaurant, go to that bar, go to that show, wherever all the people are going to go, and make your friends and connections.
Yeah. That makes me think of when I went to Web Summit in Ireland, there was I think it was actually the day before the event started for founders, there was like an investor summit or something like that somehow I got invited to. And so I had an investor badge, I got into that, but it was only investors there. And so if you're a founder and you're smart and you can kind of, you know, and it was like some talks and things like that, and then they all emptied out into the bar across the street. If you had been a founder and had identified that group, like, it's really rich fishing grounds, right? Versus, you know, maybe that's a hack. I'm kind of jumping around, but like, if you can identify some of the investor focused tracks and make yourself in the vicinity of those, could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I think, not to touch on this for too long, but you know, one of the smart strategies and something that I would potentially even consider doing is, let's say you have a friends and family investor, right? And let's say it's a good friend and you say, hey, listen, I'll pay for a trip to New Orleans. All you have to do is get this investor badge. And you go out there, and then you have somebody that's actually able to have access to that breeding ground.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Any other before we get there, did you see a company called Price.com? They're a Founder Suite customer and a new friend, a guy named RJ. He was on stage pitching Price. Did you happen to catch them? I'm curious.
I did not catch them, unfortunately, because I was actually only at Collision for about 2 hours. We were down there filming that documentary I was telling you about called Funded. And so we were actually filming at the Marriott across the street. And so I didn't get to spend too much time in the event itself.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about your documentary. So Funded, what is it? What are you doing?
Yeah, so it's fundedthemovie.com. And basically what it is, you know about my podcast, and you know, I'll just shamelessly plug it if you don't mind. It's called Startup Financial News. And you know, I've been running that for about a year now. And let me just give the folks listening kind of an idea as to where that came from. I just come off my third startup and was kind of in this place where I wanted to stay involved in the startup community, in the entrepreneurship community, but I had my own personal feelings about what had happened with my last startup that I wanted to kind of take a step back from being a founder again, if you will. So I got into more of the media side. I started this thing called Startup Financial News. And really what it was experience from a three-time founder giving you the daily news that you need as an entrepreneur with that entrepreneurial spin, if you will, and really making sense of headlines and all this kind of stuff. And one of the things that I've been following for a very long time, both as a fundraising founder and now as the host of that podcast, is venture capital, and specifically early stage venture capital. And one of the trends that has become predominant in early stage venture capital is the fact that entrepreneurship is becoming more and more pop culture. It's cool now. You're kind of like a rock star if you're an entrepreneur. Everybody wants to do it. So it brings this huge influx of quote unquote entrepreneurs into the market for sometimes the right reasons, but as of late, more often than not, a lot of the wrong reasons. And so what that does is when you have an overcrowding in that space, you obviously have the money that gets interested. So you have an overcrowding in the angel and the early stage VC side because, oh, this is blowing up. We want a piece of this. So you have these two parties that are not necessarily very experienced in either entrepreneurship or in investing, but want a piece of the action, a modern day gold rush, if you will. And so I had this thesis about 9 months ago that said, you know, I bet this is going to cause a problem for the overall startup economy, right? Leading to things like overfunding, mm-hmm. leading to things like, you know, potentially poor startups being funded as opposed to the right startups getting funded, taking away money from the overall ecosystem. And so really this documentary has been researched for about 3 months on that trend. And now we're trying to translate that from what I've been talking about in the podcast and Startup Financial News into a movie, into a documentary to illustrate, you know, whether or not there is a problem, if you will.
Yeah, interesting. So you're interviewing, how many founders did you interview and what was... Was there any commonality to them? Were they all seed funded or angel funded or Series A?
Yep. So we had 1,500 startups apply. We had 200 or roughly 200 send us videos for screen testing to see if they could be on camera. And we selected 17 of, you know, the most powerful stories. And we had a range of pre-funding all the way to Series A in those 17 interviews. And that's just the first round of shooting at Collision. But the common theme that we got, to be totally honest with you, Nathan, is that early stage venture capital today, specifically we're talking pre-seed, seed, and even touching on, you know, the early stage Series A rounds, is that founders seem to be banging their heads against the wall a little bit more often than they used to, because they get this false narrative, if you will, that all these early stage VC firms and pre-seeds and angels are saying, hey, we have money, come pitch us. Hey, we have money, come pitch us. But it almost seems like either A, too many people are pitching them. So there's actually, even though there's more money being deployed, there's not as much money being distributed, if you will, or not to as many companies. And then also you have a lot of this overcrowding, which is facilitating another problem that, you know, sometimes the slick back used car salesman is getting the money as opposed to the startup that's trying to cure cancer, if you will.
Is it, so I guess what's the takeaway? Like what's the net for founders? Does it mean they need to increase the number of investors in their funnel because there's so much more competition? I mean, like, you know, what's the takeaway for founders?
I think that you kind of hit the nail right on the head. Is now more than ever, if you want to make it as a founder that's going to be a fundraising CEO, right? You're going to have a angel venture capital backed company, if you will, that's in your roadmap. Then, you know, your job from day one, you really need to be focusing on, okay, here's how we're going to raise, and, you know, making sure that you have that fundraise planned out, that you're, you know, building that network of investors early on. Because, you know, to be honest with you, Nathan, it just seems like the overcrowding seems to be the problem more than anything else. And if you can't stand out in an ecosystem where entrepreneurship is pop culture, I mean, I'm sorry, but it's going to be infinitely more difficult for you to raise money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How were some of these interviewees standing out? Like what was, were they just super dynamic founders, or did they have some unique twist on a market? You know, was there any patterns you saw?
So 4 out of the 17 were, you know, ex-startup founders. This was their second, third, fourth, or fifth startup. And what they did is they leveraged their networks, you know, based on investors and all that kind of stuff from those past startups, from those past mistakes, failures, if you will,
yeah,
to hopefully, you know, push this startup along. And all of those four founders had actually already raised capital for their businesses because they had the pre-existing relationships. The ones that hadn't raised yet were a little bit more naive as to what the process was going to look like, saying things like, oh, well, when we're ready to do this, we'll start, you know, 3 weeks before and try and pitch these people and we'll get these meetings. And, you know, we had to let them speak because we want that angle as well. But they were a little bit more naive because they had never been through the process. And then we had this middle ground, probably 8 or 9, maybe 10, I can't remember exactly right now, but the median, if you will, of the interviewees that basically said they had been out on the fundraising trail, but they lacked success for a number of reasons. Either A, because they didn't anticipate how long the process takes, or B, because they didn't realize how many investors they actually had to make connections with before they had any chance of funding. Some thought you could talk to three and you'd magically get funded.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, after we would interview them, I told them, I said, for my last business, I did 397 career pitches. And that was just for one startup. And, you know, that blew them away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I obviously, given what I do with running Founder Suite, I get those startups coming to me all the time too, and they're, you know, the founders.
You've
got to
get it even more than I do.
Well, it's funny because the founders would be frustrated. Like, I'm, you know, I get this. You know, we're obviously pitching them to come onto Founder Suite to use our platform, but they come back to me. It's like, well, how can you really help? Because I've already talked to 10 investors and none of them have written me a check. I'm like, 10? You know, you can be frustrated when you've talked to 150 and no one's moving the needle, but like, you haven't even scratched the surface. And the thing I always tell them, similar to yours, like when I raise our seed round, and this is in an even healthier market maybe of 2015, you know, I pitched over 200 investors and ended up with one seed venture fund and 10 angels. And so you can do that math, right? It's just,
I mean, that's the exact thing. And I'm not here to plug Founder Suite. I don't want anybody to get the, you know, this whole thing twisted, but I'm actually a Founder Suite customer. And so if I can tell you anything, it's that what I learned through the process of the last startup is that, you know, fundraising, if you will, is a relationship game, right? It's a game of follow-up. It's a game of, yes, numbers, because you have to have the numbers to follow up. But it's really the same thing as generating sales or driving a sales funnel. You have to have a CRM. You have to have a management tool, because the fact of the matter is, now more than ever, and you're right, it was a healthier economy when I was playing the game too, in terms of raising capital. It was a little bit easier. Sure, you read in the Wall Street Journal today that cash is flooding VC funds. But the fact of the matter is, it's not being distributed equally. You have more money than ever before being deployed into Series C, D, and E because they're trying to hold on to these unicorns. So the narrative is actually quite twisted. And if you want to get early stage funding, I mean, you better bet, you better not be complaining until you've pitched at least, in my opinion, at least 100 to 200 investors.
Well, and that's, I'm going to emphasize that for anyone who's not familiar, because I think that's a really important point. You do see the headlines. Lots of money coming into venture, but as you just mentioned, it's going into largely later stage deals, and the really early stage seed, not CD. I mean, the really early stage seed and angel stuff has dried up quite a bit or gotten a lot more competitive.
And that's what Fun of the Movie is all about. I mean, it's all about, you know, exploring that thesis and getting real world insight, you know?
What, so let's talk a little more on the movie, and then I want to have few other things I want to touch on. When's it coming out? What's the kind of distribution game here?
Yep. So we're in early stage distribution talks. Can't really say the names just yet, but you know, I'll be handling that when I actually see you in California in about a month or so. Expected release is mid 2019, with the trailers coming late 2018. So that's kind of the timeline.
Did you ever watch the movie Startup.com?
That's the biggest inspiration for this film, Nathan. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Uh-huh. So this is, you know, if you're a millennial or Gen, whatever it is, Startup.com was a movie that chronicled this startup in the first dot-com wave in the late 90s called GovTech, I think, or GovWorks.
GovWorks.
Yeah, really fascinating. And, the startup, they follow them around as they're pitching investors, and they raise some money and, you know, ended up not being successful. But if you want some historical context on the startup ecosystem and world, watch startup.com. And then, of course, watch the title is Funded, the movie?
It's Funded, the movie, right? Working title, so bear with us.
Gotcha. Yep. Cool. Very cool. I can't wait to check it out.
You hit the nail on the head. Sorry, just as my last little plug here. It's basically a follow-up to startup.com, if you will. It's, you know, 20 years later, what does our environment look like?
Are many of these companies that you're interviewing, are they looking at alternative funding sources like either token sales or crowdfunding sites, or, you know, how are they solving this scarcity problem and anything like that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad you bring that up, because you're kind of giving me opportunities here to shamelessly plug, but I have a book coming out on that alone, because what I've been doing this last year and a half is not only following this as a podcast host, but working with both friends and now clients as a venture capital consultant, helping them figure out how much they need to raise and where they can raise it from. And I can tell you that, Nathan, if I have my pulse at all on the finger of what's going on, or my finger on the pulse at all as to what's going on in this ecosystem, in this environment for entrepreneurs, for fundraising CEOs. I can tell you that, realistically speaking, more and more entrepreneurs are either electing to go down the route of alternative funding or postpone funding until they find the right fit, because what they're looking for is, okay, yes, ICOs are interesting, but what about things like competitions? What about things like just going straight to an incubator instead of, you know, doing a straight up pre-seed round right now, right? So I think that there's a lot of alternative fundraising being explored. I'm just not sure that we have that whole side to entrepreneurship figured out yet, because the fact of the matter is, right, if you're going to do a startup, and there are plenty of startups that actually require serious funding to compete, you know, just from day one, if you're going to do one of those, alternative funding might not be the best. But then again, you have a lot of entrepreneurs that are coming into this, calling themselves entrepreneurs, not really knowing what they're doing, and just playing the fundraising game because they think that's what they have to do. And I think that's potentially what's causing, like you said earlier, that angel and pre-seed and seed stuff to dry up a little bit more than it has in the past.
Okay. All right. Let's touch on a few other things here. What you know, your last company, Blurtbox, you guys raised... What'd you raise there? This topic or this podcast is how I raised it, so I want to get into that just a bit. How much did you guys raise for that company?
Yeah, so that was $1.2 million, if I remember correctly.
And was that all angel or VC or a mix, friends and family?
So that was all. We got up to Series A there, so.
Up to Series A, okay. And
We were actually, just to put that into context, because I know you have a lot of, you know, Silicon Valley and California folks listening to the show, we were operating in Orlando, Florida, in the southeast of the United States, which if you do any research in terms of venture capital markets, you get about one-tenth the funding that you would expect to receive in San Francisco. So we tell people, you know, in an Orlando round, if you will, that's closer to your $5 or $10 million round in San Francisco.
It's like dog years.
You can tell me about it. Right. But I'll tell you one thing, you could stretch a heck of a lot further in Orlando.
I've got one of my angels is in Tampa, and Tampa, Florida, and he's always trying to get me to relocate there, talking about cost of living and everything else. Although it's gone up, my wife and I visit there because her family's there, and we used to play a game of driving around with Zillow app open, just looking at like the waterfront houses we could get for $500,000 or $700,000, you know, which doesn't buy you a shack in Silicon Valley. Yeah, interesting. So you raised 1.2 for that one, and what was the conclusion to that startup? How did it get acquired? Did you guys close up shop, or what was the end story?
Yeah, so in the end, basically what ended up happening was we were financially over-leveraged, believe it or not. I know that doesn't sound like a massive round of financing, but what ended up happening is we had raised money. And, you know, I kind of have this feeling with, if you're a fundraising CEO, right, you really are a fundraising career CEO, because that does kind of tie into your startup. I mean, you look at some of the biggest startups in the world, and when they start taking anything after friends and family round, you kind of are always, you know, not addicted, but on that path of having to continuously fundraise. And so one of the biggest mistakes, and, you know, this is just me being vulnerable here, one of the biggest mistakes that I made as the founder of that company was to stop fundraising, if you will. Right. I tried going down the fundraising path, and then I said, oh, let's pump the brakes and let's try and bootstrap it now, which was completely, if you want the honest truth, the wrong move, because we could not compete on the level that we had gotten used to competing at with our burn rate. Once you get addicted to that burn rate, you kind of need to keep that going. Right. So what ended up happening was, once I realized that, you know, I kind of had to just say to the staff, look, we're about to go through some rough stuff. I'm sorry. And some of them left voluntarily. And then, you know, towards the end, I had to let the rest of them go. And we were on the acquisition path, but ended up talking to a company that we were going to do a deal with, that it just did not work out. And, you know, for legal reasons, I can't really get into it, but we ended up having to actually escrow away the IP for that and say, hey, you know, maybe give this a shot later on. But, you know, it was a very sad and unfortunate story. And a lot of it was because, you know, I didn't properly analyze the steps that we needed to take to move forward.
Interesting. That's a good lesson learned. I mean, if you're going to step on the funding treadmill, you have to be, as you call it the fundraising CEO. How does that experience change how you would think about fundraising, you know, for your next startup? Like, would you not raise money, or would you go all in and be the fundraising CEO, or, you know, or something else I'm not thinking of?
Yeah, no, and here's the thing, Nathan, and I said it earlier, and, you know, just to reiterate it, what I really do believe is that you have, you know, two classifications of startups. You have startups that can be totally bootstrapped, right, that they're literally built to be bootstrapped, and that their teams are scrappy enough to make that happen. And unfortunately, in today's ecosystem, that feeling and desire to bootstrap is not as cool or as flashy as it once was. But all that being put aside, you do have that level of startups. Mm-hmm. Then you have the startups that, for whatever reason, let's say they're doing med tech, or they're trying to solve some cancer technology, or they're doing some really robust AI stuff or VR stuff, and there's a very clear path to acquisition or a very clear growth path. Totally okay, and if not, no, not even totally okay, but absolutely necessary, if you will, to go down and use and even exploit that fundraising path, because that's what it's there for. That's what pre-seed, seed, angel, series A, that's what they're just, those types of startups, that's what the funding is designed for. And so I guess the lesson learned, if you're asking me, if I was going to go down and do some crazy complex AI play, absolutely, I'm going to realize that in my roadmap from day one, right? Even, again, not to plug Founder Suite, but even when I'm getting ready, I would pre-plan all my Founder Suite rounds way in advance, because I know it's going to be a part of the roadmap. Whereas if I'm going to bootstrap, right, I'm going to not necessarily make it easier on myself by saying, hey, buddy, can I borrow 10 grand? I'll pay you back 12 or something like that, because that could get me in more trouble. So I think it's all about analyzing at the very beginning, sitting down, having a real talk with yourself as a founder and with your team, and saying, okay, what is the roadmap? And where and how does fundraising play a role?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. You know, you're making me think of, I think sitting down and thinking about your kind of capital stack and what that future capital stack looks like, and whether it's equity rounds. I mean, there's a lot of alternative ways to finance businesses these days. If you can get the flywheel turning. You know, like I think of some friends of ours at Lighter Capital that do like revenue-based financing, so it's non-dilutive.
I like those guys a lot.
Yeah, the CEO does a pretty interesting talk called kind of optimizing your capital stack, and it's sort of doing this math, like you're saying, analyzing up front in the early days and figuring out, you know, how much of this do I want to be selling equity versus using my recurring revenue to finance the business, to just purely using cash flow to generate, to invest in the business, right? I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but you got to be mindful of that upfront, which I think is sometimes in short supply when you're just starting your company and you're just fired up to go, you know?
Yeah, no, and I mean, and not to get too MBA on anybody here or anything, but I mean, this brings to mind just that iconic statement that prior planning prevents piss poor performance, right? And it should be the same thing. And I don't know why, and maybe it's easier for me because I'm on the other side of the table now, but I don't know why, and I can understand why, even after I bash this into friends' heads, into other entrepreneurs' heads, into people that want to take a mentoring meeting, I tell them, look, if you're going to go down the fundraising trail, start planning it out now. Plan it all the way through acquisition, right? Go in there and set those rounds up so that you can say, okay, when I meet somebody from, from First Round Capital, I can dump that contact right back into Founder Suite into the seed or the pre-seed bunch, right? When I meet somebody from KPCB at a networking event, I can dump them into the Series C or D round, right? Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me that founders aren't doing that today, because I can tell them, look, if you don't have your tools and your network and your connections set up now, fundraising has become infinitely more difficult than when I first got started in this almost 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Infinitely more difficult. And you have to plan.
Yeah, I like that. Actually preemptively building multiple funnels, building multiple relationship networks to match your funding, longer term funding strategy. That's a very thoughtful way of doing it. Good stuff. Let's see.
That gets me a little fired up, because that's all personal experience right there, personal mistakes.
Yeah, it's but it's good, and it's worth taking the time to kind of plan it out, and knowing that things are going to change on the fly, like maybe the funding market contracts and you've got to kind of shift more towards bootstrapping, less unfunded, or the maybe the funding market in your particular space, you know, goes gangbusters, as we see with different micro categories, right? I don't know what the hot trend du jour is, but like for a while it was AI and machine learning, and then it's, you know, crypto and blockchain, and I mean, things get hot and a lot of money flows in, so maybe you adjust your strategy on the fly, you know, depending on the level of heat in your space, but having a kind of a longer term funding roadmap is, I think, something very few founders do that really could help the company. So I like that concept.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's see. Well, listen, this is good. A couple things, I guess, if people want to tune into your podcast, it's called Startup Financial News, and they just find it on iTunes. Is that right?
Yep, it's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher, it's on all the major podcast platforms, and they can visit sfnshow.com if they're so inclined to listen. And obviously, I appreciate you saying that. We'd love to have any new listeners, so thanks for that.
Do you get into much fundraising news on that, or is it more, what's the common themes happening on that show?
Yeah, so basically it's designed to either be a snippet for entrepreneurs to get the daily news that they need. So we have an intro section, if you will, that basically has what you need to know, which is a 30-second clip that's also on Amazon Alexa's brief of basically, hey, here's what's going on in the world for entrepreneurs. Then we have today's top headlines, which are your five most important headlines in tech, startup, and VC news. And then at that point, that's about 5 minutes into the show, and then there's market data, you know, how the markets are performing. That's about 5 minutes into the show. And if you have to move on with your day, or if you only have a 5 minute train ride, no problem. You can stop the show there and at least go into work with, more insight as to what's going on. And if not, the second half of the show, which is anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes, we either go deeper into those headlines, if that's what's important for that day, or we bring on guests like you or like Oren Claff, the author of Pitch Anything, or Jay Samet, the author of Disrupt You, or other entrepreneurs, really just to give entrepreneurs an edge, because that's what you need, as we've been talking about this whole episode in today's market, is an edge if you want to succeed.
Cool. Very good. And then is there any call to action for people to be tuned into the movie, funded the movie when it comes out? Do you have a landing page yet or anything like that? Or how can people learn more about that?
Yeah, so if they just go to fundedthemovie.com, just like every other, you know, movie and all that out there, if you throw your email address in there, there's going to be no spam, but you will get updates periodically in terms of what's going on in production. So that would be the best way, is just fundedthemovie.com.
Are you looking for more startups to interview? If someone wants to be considered for an interview, can they apply there or anything?
Yeah, absolutely. So once we figure out where our home is going to be, and when I say home, basically our distribution network, which we should know by the end of June, our plan is to actually do some follow-up casting. And we want to hit California, Atlanta, Miami, Chicago, and New York, and specifically in California, Los Angeles and San Francisco, basically to interview. We want to get up to 50 startups to feature their stories is the goal. So yeah, there's definitely more opportunity there.
Cool. I can't wait to hear more. All right, Julian, thank you so much. Appreciate you tuning in here, and we'll catch you when the movie comes out, or if not before then.
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Nathan.
Cheers.